General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushbelt of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
Many years before South Africa became a republic, a man called William R. Carey came to Johannesburg. He was a big man, a successful man, who boasted of his prowess with a gun in the bushlands throughout the continent. In those days, a lot of Americans were members of the Union Club, amongst them Harry Jones, the hunter. Harry was not a big man, and he never boasted, although his exploits were legendary. I suppose it annoyed Carey to meet a real hunter whose name was a household word. I don't know. What I do know is the meeting in the billiard room of the Union Club sparked off the most extraordinary gamble, and indirectly saved the lives of a lot of animals that would otherwise have ended up as trophy heads. I've called my story tonight The $10,000 Bet. Peter Mitchell was at the club that night. He was in the billiard room when the wager was made. In fact, it was he who introduced Carey to the little hunter, and was therefore responsible for what happened.
Carey! I'd like to meet Harry Jones. You and he've got a lot in common. Harry and Will Carey. I'm not trying to be poetical.
Harry Jones, the big shot hunter, eh?
Sort of.
Well, I've shot them all.
Oh? Well, that's great.
Yep. All of them. Lion, leopard, buffalo, rhino.
Carey had shot them all. He'd run giraffe down with a truck, shot lions from a tree platform, bagged elephant from the rear, shot rhino from trees. He even bragged about getting a hippo with a submachine gun. Carey had no scruples.
I've shot more animals than any other man alive. I shot 617 animals in 290 days.
What for?
What for? Well, because I'm a sportsman. That's what for.
Of a kind.
Is that a crack?
Go away, mister.
Okay, Harry, how about a drink?
Sure, I got it.
No, wait a minute. What are you trying? I'm a sportsman. Got lion, elephant, buff. I have the finest guns in Africa.
You don't really need guns. You could have got all those animals without so much noise.
You can't kill animals without guns.
How do you think natives killed big game before guns were invented?
No guns, huh?
Listen, fella. I'm an old man. But even now, without a gun, I could get all the animals you've had. I know a native tracker who could start out right now with only a hand axe and within 60 days, return with heads of elephant, lion, croc, buffalo, rhino, and hippo. He wouldn't use guns or poisons. Now, go away, please, before I lose my patience.
Let's go, Harry.
I got $10,000, but says you're a liar, Jones.
Wait here.
He left the room. He went to the club office and got £1,000 from the cashier, returned to the billiards room, and laid his money on the table.
The bet's on. One thing, Mr. Carey. You win, you get the money. I win, I get a promise from you. Okay?
Oh, what's that?
You've done enough killing. I win, and you put your guns away. Deal on?
Why, sure, son. Guns away, huh?
Guns away. For good.
Deal's on.
Take over, Peter.
Carey put his money alongside Jones's. Witnesses formed a committee to hold stakes and to work out details of the hunt. Mitchell slipped away. and found Jones playing a slot machine in an arcade off President Street.
What's on, Harry?
Well, Carrie's got lots of money and he can afford to lose. But in the morning, if he wants to, we'll call it off.
And if he still wants to go through with it...
Well, then I'm angling for something more than money.
The deaths of a few animals so that a lot more will be safe from Carrie's gun.
About the size of it?
Yeah. The tracker's name is Ubusuku. He'll leave Kindu, Congo, wearing only shorts. His weapon, his only weapon, will be a hand axe. He'll return to Kindu within 60 days with the heads we decide upon. No guns, no poisons. He'll use any additional weapon he can fashion himself.
6 animals to die, so that a lot more may live. Carrie was to hang his guns away, like the Texas Ranger of legend, whose friends had all crossed the Great Divide. Carrie didn't back down. He and Mitchell were to accompany Ubusuku. 2 Englishmen, D.C. Davis and Arthur Elkoff, whose integrity couldn't be doubted, were to accompany the party as referees. Both were wealthy, retired, and tickled pink. Kindu area, Congo, December.
I see you, too.
This is the place, boss. Come without disturbing boss Gary, and I will show you.
They walked northeast across new grass, glistening with minute water droplets. The ground dipped into a swale. It was boggy. The grass grew tall and coarse. Through the swale's center, a rivulet ran. A plover led them to the crocodile. The beast lay just out of the water. The plover roosted upon the great ugly head.
It is a sign, boss. Here I will slay the crocodile for old wise bones. Here also I will slay elephants. They are nearby.
So, one croc's to die, so that Carrie will leave the rest alone, huh? Make Carrie hang his guns in his cupboard, and the world swarms with crocs as a result.
Crocs, boss. Bad. Should kill them all.
Not at all. It would pain me to think that your great-grandchildren will never see a croc, just as much as it would to know that they'd never see a lion. The crocs follow their nature. It's not their fault, their means eating. They're true to what they are, which is more than you can say for the majority of the human race. You don't know what I'm talking about, do you?
No, what?
Old elephant's spoor. It's a month old.
Not so, Hunter. The water is from below. The dung is not spaced far apart, so they are not traveling. The dung is scattered, and fresh dung is over the old in some places. They drink from the river, this river, and stand dreaming amongst the bushes when their bellies are cooled.
They returned to camp. Elkoff had shot a hartebeest heifer and was skinning it for breakfast.
Well, it looks to me like we're making a sucker out of Ubusuku. He takes all the risks, and Jones or I get the money. I don't want to see Ubusuku killed.
But what about the bit?
I'll let Jones collect. And the other little bit? The end of your shooting career?
Let's get one thing clear, Carrie. If I were to give Ubusuku a gun to go after animals, he certainly would get killed. He's smart. But he can't get over the idea that the harder you pull the trigger, the faster a bullet goes. He couldn't hit an elephant from 10 yards. But give him a spear, a knife, his little hatchet, he'll win that bet without even getting a scratch.
After breakfasting off the hartebeest heifer, they followed Ubusuku to the river. They took positions behind bushes at the lip of the swale and adjusted their field glasses so that the river brink, 50 yards away, seemed only a few paces. Carrie was nervous. Twice he checked his .450 to make sure there was a cartridge in the rifle breech. Aylcuff adjusted his camera. Davis puffed at an empty pipe in a manner which suggested he was nervous too. Ubusuku had fashioned an 18-inch dagger. He'd made it from a sapling, tapering and hardening it by holding it in the fire until it was like butcher's steel. He and his dagger disappeared downwind.
If he's gonna kill Croc, that dagger, he's nuts.
Ubusuku loves to put on a show. This, Mitchell, will be good.
Nervous, DC?
Bosh.
And stop chewing your pipe. There's nothing in it.
Ubusuku's in the river now.
Swimming upstream.
The Zulu crawled from the water opposite them and lay on his side, his back to the sun. One arm across his face.
What the... Bait.
Huh?
Bait. You mean...
He's seen a croc along there. Now he's pretending he's dead, so the croc will attempt to drag him into the water. Not many men can remain motionless for long enough to allay a croc's suspicions. This may take hours.
Yeah, but he can.
He is.
Oh, it's murder.
For who, Gary? The croc or Ubusuku?
Yeah, but that dagger, that long...
Will...
Would you say Ubusuku's 65 yards away?
65 or 70?
What are you doing?
Fixing my backside.
Don't you do any shooting, Carrie. Give him a chance.
Yeah, but I...
If it gets tough, I'll do the shooting. Get back to your glasses. Somewhere along there, you'll see two black knobs. Crocodile's eyes. I'll watch, too. One finger right from Ubusuku. The edge of the water. The black rock, size of a small pumpkin. Do you see it?
Yes.
The croc. Watch. No more talking.
Ubusuku's lying like a dead man, watching the croc from under his arm.
Bitten by sand fleas.
Bitten by gnats. Chewed by ants.
Pestered by...
Head seems larger now. I don't know if the croc's seen Ubusuku. If he hasn't, he'll drag himself into the sunshine. If he has, then he'll move as slowly as the hour hand on a clock. So slowly that the only way you could know it moved was to turn your eyes away for a time and then back again.
If the croc gets Ubusuku, Mitchell.
He won't.
Yeah, but if. Just supposing he did.
Then he'll drag him into the water and drown him. He won't eat him for a week. Crocs can't chew. He'll let Ubusuku rot and then tear him into chunks.
Yeah, well, all right. Just...
Sometimes they just shake a corpse like a dog shakes a...
Oh, for pity's sake.
Shh. The crocodile has made a little rush. He's put a sand billow between himself and the inert figure of the man who pretends to be dead.
Watch the top of the mound that hides the croc from us and Ubusuku.
Two black knobs. Eyes? No. Gone. Not eyes.
Two black knobs. Eyes? No. Not eyes. Spots caused by looking too long, too hard.
They haven't gone this time. Eyes! Croc's eyes.
Now the whole head. Teeth flashing. Grinning.
Ubusuku lies immobile.
The mouth's 20 feet from him. 8 feet before he makes the rush to kill.
Ubusuku. Still as death.
The croc might stand on his toes, scurry forward and try to grab Ubusuku with his teeth. Or he might whirl and hit him with his tail.
The crocodile slides forward, and again.
No!
The rip reptile rears, falls sideways, stands on its tail, opens its jaws wide, whirls again, and smacks the ground with its belly, head towards the river. Ubusuku leaps upon the wounded beast's back. He kneels behind the head, bends forward, wrapping his powerful fingers round the crocodile's closed snout.
Only the top jaw of the croc moves.
The lower jaw is joined solidly to the skeleton.
Once the jaw is closed, any strong pair of hands may hold it shut. The croc whirls end for end, throwing Ubusuku clear. The Zulu leaps erect. The croc's slashing tail bangs against his ankles and cuts him down like a scythe blade.
Ubusuku, watch it.
You all right, Ubusuku?
I had to shoot.
Your bullet did its job, Carrie. Mine only finished it.
I heard the voice of the big gun, and it came to me that a man who blows much wind from his mouth also blows it from his other end.
Oh, but Suko,
leave the boy alone. I spoiled his game. I concede the crocodile's head.
Whether Carrie conceded the crocodile's head or not, this meant nothing to Ubusuku. He had promised Harry Jones to kill a croc without the aid of a gun, and he meant to carry out his promise. His problem was to kill the croc on land, so that he could get the head. If he drove his big spear through the creature, it would take off spear and all for the water. There was no use telling the Zulu to play it safely. For once in his life, he was the center of interest, and he was going to make the most of it. He had the strength of two men, astonishing stamina, and perfect muscular coordination. The next morning dawned. Davis, Elkoff, and Carrie were ready to watch the second crocodile chase by mid-morning. Mitchell watched Ubusuku. This man dawdled, polishing his spear, rubbing oil into his dagger, whetting his hatchet upon a stone.
Come on, Ubusuku.
The man who shakes the trees with his wind must leave his gun in camp.
Boss Carrie was nervous. He didn't want to see you killed.
If a man's bowels quake when he sees a crocodile or hunter, they will turn to liquid at the sight of a lion or a buffalo. The windy one is more dangerous than Nyukuyama when in Slova.
Carrie, he's gone stubborn. He won't play if you take your rifle. Do you mind leaving it in camp?
Well, I'd just as soon go hunting naked as without a gun. But, if that's what he wants, that's the way it'll be.
A look of surprise flitted across Ubusuku's face. For a white man to accede to a native's wishes was almost unheard of.
I have heard the voice of my guardian spirit, and it comes to me that the gun with the big voice will not hurt me.
And the Zulu stoops and picks up the American's rifle.
Here, boss. It is not you that is the rascal, but I.
Carrie has won a friend. The black man walks upstream. The white men follow. Crocodiles slide into the water, but they're not big enough. The black man is not interested in these. After 2 miles, the flat banks of the river grow less sandy. Ubusuku stops. He holds up a hand in warning. He walks away from the river. He circles, regains the bank 100 yards downstream, lays his spear on the ground, and slips quietly into the water.
Keep your glasses focused around there, where he went in.
Nothing but mud.
Look.
2 rows of white fangs, just white fangs, and they vanish momentarily. Then they appear again, with a small bird picking at them.
There's the crocodile. He's half out of the mud.
That's what he's after.
Oh, what the devil's Ubusuku doing in that river with hungry crocs?
He'd as soon fight them in water as on land. Once in the Okavango swamps, I watched him fight a croc in a deep slough. He got the croc by the foreleg. He hung on and then stabbed with a short-handled assegai. He killed that one to demonstrate to me that killing them with guns was work for fat women.
What's he gone into the water for?
He can't crawl through mud silently. It sucks you in. Yes, he'll approach the croc from behind. Glasses, Davis.
Yeah.
Water will prevent the croc getting his scent.
He's been in the river 10 minutes. You think he had
ears? Look. You see?
The ear flaps were fluttering like shirt tails in the wind. The bird flew out of the croc's mouth, settled on the reptile's back, then darted away. Then Ubusuku's head, a dark round ball, appeared at the river's brink. And then Ubusuku struck, his weapon held high and down, down. The front half of the crocodile's body threshed from side to side, and then the body fell, sending up a spray of mud. Next on the list, elephant. Crocodile dead, so that others would be free from the hot guns of the American. And now, elephant.
Weeds are too high, Mitchell. I'll never get decent pictures. Don't talk. Wind might change direction.
The big Zulu took off his shorts. He wore nothing else. He walked a few yards and rubbed himself, rolled himself in fresh elephant dung. He was ready. He placed his spear, dagger, and hatchet on the ground. He took the hatchet and felt its edge.
The elephant know we are here, but they think we are baboon. Do not let the red-necked white man fire the big gun.
How's he going to kill it?
He's going to bleed it.
Bleed?
I don't like the method either. But by doing it this way, he's going to win the bet, do you see? There's more than enough room for all the elephants that are here to continue living here. By winning the bet, Jones's bet, Carrie will be prevented from getting amongst them with his guns. One dies nastily, the rest live to breed. Well, there it is. One death, life for many. Unlike other parts of the continent, where they're overcrowding and eating too much, here they're all right, and they'll stay that way. But Carrie was planning to get amongst them, and you know what those guns can do. So we watch one elephant who will be a martyr die, because Ubusuku will win this bet. Carrie?
Yeah?
If the elephant charges, remember you can outrun him. If you get 40 or 50 yards away, he can't see you.
Ubusuku is close now, close to the great beast. The elephant senses the man. Elephants habitually only turn in one direction, some to the right and some to the left. Seldom, even under stress, will one turn in the opposite direction. If startled, they turn towards the point of danger. This was the Zulu's plan, to cause the elephant to turn and be close to the outthrust trunk when the turn started. And then the hatchet flashed, and the trunk was severed. The only excuse for this kind of killing was the knowledge that because a bargain had been struck, one death would prevent the deaths of more. And then the native raced round the back of the animal. The elephant turned the wrong way, and the hatchet flashed. An injury was done to the leg, and the lumbering beast, the fight taken from him in the hatchet's flash, settled down to die.
What happened? I saw the hatchet raised, and then...
Harry, why don't you walk up and put the beast out of its misery?
What will I do?
A couple of slugs through the heart.
Most animals can get along for a while on three legs, but not the elephant. He needs four. Ubusuku's elephant sensed that all was over and lay down to die.
Ubusuku's won this part of the bet too, Carrie.
The money belongs to Jones. Here's one.
And the lion, the hippo.
No, hold it. Hold it. I concede. I got my collection back in the States. I reckoned I'd got another 10 years shooting ahead of me.
And now?
I'm through. I called Jones a liar. Well, he'll have to forgive me. Mitchell, in camp are two guns. I want you to have them. I'm not going to put them away. I'd rather give them away. In Johannesburg, a lot more. The whole darn artillery. Well, those will go to Jones. The money? Well, I don't care what happens to the money, as long as Subasuku here gets some.
No lion hunt?
No lion hunt. I can imagine what that boy would do. Why, he'd walk right up to some old lion and charm him to lay down, give up the ghost. Friends, guns? Why, guns are primitive and unsportsmanlike.
Gentlemen, there's a bottle in the camp. More than one bottle. I shall give you a toast. The animals of the felt and a sportsman.
A man who does not love nature is a disappointment to me. I am liable to mistrust him. Otto von Bismarck. Good night.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushveld. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.